You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
James Harden and Eric Gordon combined for 90 points on better than 50% shooting, and it somehow still wasn't enough for the Rockets to beat a Washington team that entered Monday night at 7-12. With that incredibly unfortunate factoid, welcome in to another post-game episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's episode is sponsored by Action Heat, which makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Stay toasty warm during outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat apparel, and use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save an additional 20%. As stated off the top, the Rockets' losing streak is now at 3 games, and they are now below 500 on the year at 9-10. We talk a lot about sample size on this program, and the Rockets are now more than 23% of the way into their 82-game sample, and they are now a below 500 basketball team. That is not insignificant. Now, in this latest loss, Monday's 135-131 defeat in overtime to the Washington Wizards, Chris Paul did not play. Saturday, they termed it rest. Tonight, they admitted he's battling a sore leg. Gerald Green also did not play. We saw the promotion of Daniel House from the G League, and he actually played 28 minutes, which tells you the state of the Rockets bench, that a guy who started the day with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers all of a sudden comes up and plays the most minutes of anyone on your bench. A bench that combined had just 9 points, simply staggering. But we can talk about depth issues, the injuries, late game execution, all of that later. Because the bottom line for me in this game, when you have James Harden, the reigning MVP, put up 54 points and 13 assists, when you have Eric Gordon score 36 points on better than 50% shooting, combined, those two guys, James and Eric, were a combined 29 of 55 from the field with 15 assists. That should be enough offense to beat anyone. I don't care what the state of your bench is or your depth. Now, granted, the Wizards are a better team than the record. They're 8-12. They got off to a poor start, but John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter Jr., Kelly Oubre, they've got some decent talent up and down that roster, and maybe that leak last week from Woj they were considering selling off was something that's motivating the team. They did beat the Clippers last week, a game in which they trailed by 24. Tonight's game, the Rockets led by 17 in the first quarter. Last week, the Clippers in Washington led them by 24, and the Wizards rallied to score 125 and win that game as well. So the Wizards have credit, but this is not a Washington Wizards show. This is a Houston Rockets show, and if you have 90 points between your starting backcourt and 15 assists, and it's not enough to win the game, there are no excuses. And unlike Saturday night, even against a Cleveland team that's not very good, I was willing to say, look, it's night two of a road back-to-back. You were out-rebounded 49-30. The Rockets, as entering today, the dead last team in the NBA in defensive rebounding rate against Tristan Thompson, one of the best offensive rebounders of our generation. Maybe that's just a perfect storm of circumstances. That's not the case today. The Wizards actually didn't even have Dwight Howard out due to injury, and he's their top presence near the rim. In fact, the Rockets actually out-rebounded Washington 47-38. So it was very different than the game Saturday, in which it just seemed they didn't have any legs. The Rockets were not on a back-to-back, and yet despite being +9 on the glass, they still gave up 125 in regulation and 135 when you factor in overtime. That's simply unacceptable. And even aside from the bench, look at your starters. P.J. Tucker played 43 minutes. James Ennis, 31. Clint Capella, 38. James Harden, 47. Eric Gordon, 43. Of course, a lot of those minutes totals are inflated because of the overtime period. But even if you subtract a few minutes from each, there's enough playing time from your regulars that there are no excuses, especially in a not back-to-back situation, for you to struggle that much, especially when the other team isn't even getting that many loose balls. In many ways, this was more troubling because the Rockets, they started the game very well. As mentioned, the Rockets scored 42 points in the first quarter. They went up 17 early, but the Wizards you could kind of see some ominous clouds because they rallied, got back within six late in the first quarter. The Rockets did push it back to 12 with a late flurry, but the Wizards scored 30 points. It seemed like after a quality start to the game, about 27-10 was the lead through the first 6 minutes. The Rockets, they stopped denying dribble penetration. The officials didn't help. This was one of the closest games to the beginning of the season that I've seen in terms of the freedom of movement emphasis. They were calling so many touch fouls. Clint Capella got in early foul trouble. We know the Rockets' issues at the backup center spot. They tried Marquise Chris in the first half, Isaiah Hartenstein in the second. Neither worked especially well. Down the stretch, they actually didn't go with a center at all, going with the tuck wagon lineup, which tells you what the Rockets thought of the rim protection in this game. And part of it, I think Clint Capella, three fouls in the first half, five in all, didn't think he could defend the rim as aggressively as he normally does. And it's coupled with a Washington team that, again, John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter Jr., there's a lot of playmakers who can do things off the dribble. So yes, they're a talented team. You give them some credit. But 125 in regulation shouldn't happen against anyone. And it wasn't like the Wizards just had one explosion. By quarter, 30, 37, 27, 31. It was pretty steady. The Rockets were never engaged in this game defensively. And it was weird in that, you know, like Saturday, as I said, you could somewhat chalk it up to the tired leg syndrome, having played overtime on Friday in Detroit, and all of a sudden the legs just weren't there to the extent that you would like them to be, and they were beat 49-30 on the glass. This one, the Rockets were plus 9. It still didn't matter. The Wizards led by 36 from John Wall and 32 from Bradley Beal. What's kind of remarkable, they only shot 11 of 29. That's below 38% from three, nearly matching the Rockets. And I say only because you see a team that scores 135 and you'd think, wow, especially against a team like the Rockets that was so good defensively a year ago and really until this last three-game stretch had shown a lot of signs of turning it around, you would have thought that, wow, they must have been just red hot from three. No, they really weren't. It's actually how good they were inside the arc. Overall, the Wizards shooting 57% from the field. It tells you how many easy shots they got at the rim. It would be easier to move past this if they were just hot from behind the arc. That wasn't what happened. It was unlimited lanes to the bucket. It felt like all night long. No, the officiating didn't help. But this is three games in a row where the Rockets defensively at various points have had issues. Both of the last two games, they gave up 60-plus points in the first half. That's three games in a row now, I should say, because they gave up 67 in the first half tonight. So they're coming out not setting a tone at all. They didn't have Chris Paul, but look, Chris Paul at 33 years old, he's a good team defender, but he's certainly not a guy that's going to stop dribble penetration from the likes of John Wall and Bradley Beal. You just need your guys that are out there to be better. And maybe they could argue that they're tired because of the enormous workload they're having to take on offensively. I don't know. But if that's the case, then it's up to the Rockets front office to get more depth to the point where Daniel House is a guy who started the day with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers and all of a sudden is playing 28 minutes for the Rockets in D.C. The only guy who even, besides House, who played even more than 10 minutes off the bench was Gary Clark, who played 19. Marquise Chris played 5. Isaiah Hartenstein played 7. Michael Carter-Williams, as usual, played a woeful 3, minus 7 in those. And the most concerning aspect of this to me is that there is no trend, because that's what happens when a team is in a bad place. We mentioned the last two games, the issues were largely rebounding rather than focus on the perimeter, attention to detail. And so if you bring more bodies up front, if you bring more tenacity, if you have more energy, not in a back-to-back, that should correct itself. It did. The Rockets out-rebounded Washington 47-38. Instead, there were all these other issues that suddenly arose. And that is the sign of a team that is fighting itself. That is a team that's not in a good place. And we mentioned early in the year, when they had that 1-5 start, they got a couple of ugly wins in Brooklyn and in Chicago, that sometimes you just need to see something go right. It feels like the Rockets are still in that place. Because you know what? Both of these losses on this road trip, the first and the last in Detroit and Washington, were in overtime. They easily could have gone the other way, and the Rockets would have been 2-1. Instead, they're 0-3, and as mentioned, below 500, which is simply unacceptable 19 games into the year. And when you see those types of tipping points, it's typically a team that is not all that confident in itself. And I know Chris Paul was out, but I don't really buy the excuse, especially coming off a game in which you lost fairly uncompetitively to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So, in terms of what the answer is, I'm honestly not sure. I'm a little concerned about Chris Paul's sore leg because, as I mentioned on Sunday's show, this was a big game for the Rockets. They needed to be above 500. They could not afford to be swept on this three-game road trip, especially with two of the three losses in crushing fashion in overtime. The first game, the Rockets were leading until the final seconds, that Blake Griffin three. Tonight, the Rockets were up by four with barely over 3 minutes left in regulation. They're up by two after a House dunk. House actually played fairly well in terms of his defense and playmaking, shot just 1 of 5. But again, when you're looking at the Rockets bench, beggars can't be choosers. Any contribution is better than some of the things you're getting from the likes of Michael Carter-Williams. But bigger picture, I'm worried about the Chris Paul situation only because this was a game the Rockets couldn't afford to lose, and I thought for sure that they would treat it with a sense of urgency. And to some degree, they did. You know, we mentioned they tried Marquise Chris in the first half over Isaiah Hartenstein. That didn't work, so they went right back to Hartenstein. They played House fresh out of the G League nearly 30 minutes. You can see that Mike D'Antoni is searching for answers, and that tells me that if it were at all possible, they would have had Chris Paul out there. They know that they needed this game, and unfortunately, he was not able to go. It's kind of vague what they're saying about his leg. He was able to put up shots pregame, so it's not like he's in hiding. But this is a stretch where they may need his veteran leadership, because sure, the Rockets could collectively use more depth. The bench scoring 9 points, a bench that already entered as the lowest scoring in the NBA. Yes, it's a problem. And by the way, if Eric Gordon is getting going again, then putting him with the bench unit could solve a lot of that. And of course, that depends on Chris Paul coming back. But when you go from minus 19 in rebounding to plus 9, and yet somehow overall your collective defense might still be worse because in exchange for the increased rebounding effort, somehow you've ended up giving up more driving lanes, that's not just an X's and O's issue. Yes, they could use more depth, but more than that, you need the players that are playing right now, many of them that were part of your 65-win juggernaut from a year ago, to simply be better. You could see during the 5-game winning streak that once they started rolling, there was a certain confidence, a certain swag that they played with, and James Harden, to his credit, started with a headband for, I believe, the first time in his Rockets career in hope of some sort of spark, and at least early on, Rockets racing out to a 17-point lead seemed to have it. But as the game went on, not only were they were poor defensively in very different ways than they were over the weekend, and that's the sign of a team that's not so much lacking in terms of bodies, other than just sheer depth, but more, in my opinion, from a team that's suddenly in that spiraling effect again that we thought the Rockets had pulled themselves out of, but the combination of a tough loss in Detroit coupled with the absence of Chris Paul with the leg issue. We'll see what happens when the Rockets get back to Houston. Next game is Wednesday, and I think with the Houston media contingent, myself included, we'll probably be able to get some more straight answers on what's going on, as opposed to the very limited contingent that's on the road. I think his presence is where the Rockets have to start to dig themselves out, because in my opinion, other than the fact that they clearly need more depth, I think it's less of an X's and O's issue, because Jeff Bezdelic is back now. I mean, everyone to start the year tried to pin everything on Jeff. Well, now Jeff's back, and it seems to be worse than ever. So no, I don't think it's so much, well, they need this coaching, and they need this certain personnel. No, it's a confidence issue. They need to see some things go right, and I think the first step to that is getting Chris Paul back when the Rockets return home. Will that happen? Stay tuned. We'll talk more momentarily as we move our way through our 3 points recap of this deflating 135-131 loss by the Rockets in Washington. But for now, I do want to pause and tell you about our great new sponsors over at Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery heated clothing, offering you heat on demand at literally the touch of a button. With a line starting at just $39, Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat through the use of heating panels, much like those in a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures up to 135 degrees, and they're powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours per charge. The batteries can also recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're using them. Action Heat offers both men's and women's products, with new styles and models for this winter season, so that you can stay warm and cozy from head to toe, with offerings including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments. It's perfect for anyone on your holiday shopping list, really anybody that loves the outdoors or just hates being cold. The best part, of course, is that we've got a special deal for our listeners here at Locked On Rockets to save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything they've got. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Let Action Heat keep you toasty warm during your outdoor activities this winter, especially on cold nights like tonight in Houston. And special thanks to them for sponsoring today's podcast. Jumping back into the program, we spent much of the first segment lamenting the issues the Rockets had defensively. Saturday, it was rebounding. Tonight, they improved that, but they had no answer for dribble penetration. the Rockets blowing a 17-point first quarter lead, a 4-point lead with 3 minutes to go. And overall, it's the defensive issues that are most pressing. There were some late game execution things that reared their ugly head yet again, very similar to Friday in Detroit. But again, when you lose and you have 90-plus points on 50%-plus shooting from James Harden and Eric Gordon, your starting backcourt, you have to take a macro view. Because the reality is the game should have never been there for the taking for the Wizards in the final 2 minutes of regulation and the five-minute stretch of overtime. So the Rockets, they've just got to be better defensively. They've got to have more collective mental toughness up and down the roster. And they need better depth so that guys aren't physically spent by the end of these close games. That said, over the course of 82 games, NBA teams, even the really good ones, are going to have issues. The key is to find ways to steal games when you aren't at your best, and then that buys you time and keeps you in the right frame of mind until you can start rolling again, like the five-game winning streak the Rockets were on at this point a week ago. And the Rockets, on this road trip, finished up 0-3. It's devastating. They're 9-10 after 9 games, nearly 25% of the season. And yet, it very easily could have been 2-1. And if you're 2-1, you've won 7 of your last 8 games, and it feels like you are right where you need to be. And that is the line it can be between success and failure in the NBA. And both Friday night in overtime and tonight in overtime, James Harden, despite his otherworldly numbers for the game, 54 points, 13 assists, 8 rebounds. He did chip in more on the glass, give him credit for that. The entire team did, 17 of 32 shooting, 7 of 15 from 3. All of that aside, he was too careless with the ball, 5 turnovers in the final 2 minutes of regulation, plus overtime. And yet again, it felt like the Rockets really were behind the 8 ball the entire overtime period because of some lazy, careless plays by Harden early in the period. And too often late in the game, we saw the Rockets revert back to very predictable isolation ball. Maybe some of it had to do with not having Chris Paul out there. And yes, I understand that James Harden is one of the best isolation players in the history of the NBA. But if you're in that situation, not moving the ball at all, and you're also taking the ball to try and work the clock, that makes everything incredibly predictable. During a game, you can be a great isolation player over the balance of 48 minutes because generally, even if it's one-on-one play, the defender doesn't know exactly when you're going to make your move. There's a degree of unpredictability to it. Late games, if you're trying to bleed clock, as the Rockets have with a lead late or in one-point games against the Pistons and the Wizards, generally speaking, it makes it a lot easier for the defenders. Now, yes, Bradley Beal is a very talented defender in his own right. Give him some credit. But you're making it easier for him if you don't start your move until 3 or 4 seconds left on the shot clock. And yeah, tonight you can say, well, Chris Paul wasn't out there, and Chris Paul is a hell of a playmaker in his own right. But Eric Gordon had 36 points, and it felt like he was barely even touching the ball at the end of regulation and in overtime. Clint Capella had 29 points on Friday. Tonight he had 17 on 8 of 14 shooting. He had a nice jump hook in the fourth quarter. And yet he wasn't even out there when the game was there for the taking in overtime. The degree of difficulty on the shots the Rockets settled for, they went down for Harden over a lot of the game, but they were still not very efficient shots, and whether his legs caught up with him, maybe the Wizards defended him better because of the timing issues we just discussed, I'm not sure what it is, but the quality of shots wasn't good, and there also were far too many turnovers. That needs to get cleaned up. I know it seems weird attacking a guy who scored 54 points and had 13 assists and is the MVP of the league. But number one, he brings a higher standard. And secondly, he has got to be more efficient. For some perspective, Harden shot 32 times, had 11 turnovers. Eric Gordon shot 23 times, had just one turnover. So Eric Gordon had plenty of touches as well. He just simply did not make the mistakes, some of the mental that Harden did. He also missed a critical free throw in overtime. And those are killers when you're trying to find a way. Now again, we're 20 minutes into the podcast. I didn't discuss this issue leading off because no, it is unfair to blame everything on Harden's late game decision making when he was brilliant over the balance of the game. No, the reason that this was in overtime, the reason that the Wizards, a now 8-12 team, were even close is because of the Rockets' collective deficiencies on the defensive end of the floor. I'm well aware of that. Nonetheless, because some of those defensive issues are not just a matter of personnel, but are also related to the team's collective mental state, then that's where being able to steal a game would make such a big difference. And that's where having James Harden the version of him we saw at the end of games last year. And keep in mind, the Rockets 2 years ago, when it was just James Harden, they won 55 games. And when I say just James Harden as far as being a star, he was actually not very good in the clutch. If you remember, the Rockets, they generally avoided close games that year. They lost a lot of games. They could have easily won 60 had they performed better in close games. Last year, it flipped. James Harden and Chris Paul, when they were together late in games, they were dynamic. This year, especially tonight, it doesn't feel like anywhere near the same thing. And what I'm wondering is, with Chris Paul out tonight, and I suspect now they're confirming he has a leg injury, that he was not at 100% late in the game on Friday in Detroit, maybe not as explosive, if not having the peak Chris Paul is what's different right now. And on the other hand, if the Rockets' superior late-game execution a year ago wasn't so much a change in Harden, but it was the presence of Chris Paul to make things less predictable. And what does that mean for the Rockets right now? Well, for starters, they need Chris Paul back medically. And again, I think we'll get more of an update on him when we get back to Houston. But more than that, the Rockets need to control what they can control. And while Chris Paul was not out there tonight, it did not have to be one-on-one, wait until the final 5 seconds of a shot clock, and then have James Harden go to work. Because I don't care how well he's shooting it on a given night, those are not efficient shots. If Chris Paul is the secret to the Rockets being a more dynamic and controlled team in the clutch in these late-game situations that could go either way, the way the clutch stat is defined by the league, I believe, is within 5 points in the final 5 minutes, then even if Chris isn't out there, even if you don't have his presence, then there are other things you can do to at least try and make the defense respect other areas of the floor, or perhaps other areas of the shot clock. When Eric Gordon has 36 points on a career-high 8 made three-pointers, and yet he's not even touching the ball, when Clint Capella has shown an increasing ability to score around the rim, and he's not even on the floor, then even the best player in the league, which James Harden was last year as the MVP, it can get stagnant, especially if you're going up against a very talented team and defender like Bradley Beal is for the Washington Wizards. So it's a combination of things. They need Chris Paul back, and even with these issues, Harden needs to be smarter and be mentally tougher and take care of the ball. He leads by example when he has 11 turnovers, 11 of the Rockets, 19 as a team, and that sets a bad tone. But the Rockets, all the way around, and this goes to Mike D'Antoni and the coaching staff, they also need to control what they can control, and I thought there were things that they did not do that they could have that could make things less predictable, because it's that predictability dynamic that I keep going back to that I don't think was there late in games last year that suddenly does feel like is there again. And now that's the biggest reason why these two games that were there for the taking tied going into overtime, obviously, and yet the Rockets won neither of them. That's not to say that's the reason for the loss, because in both cases, but especially tonight, it should have never been in overtime. Nonetheless, though, when it's tied going to extra frames, that's basically a 50-50 game, and it was there for the taking. And yet again, the Rockets, not only did they not take it, they really weren't even close. They were clearly playing from behind, it felt like, for the entire overtime period in Detroit, and pretty much again tonight in Washington. Final point I'll make tonight in this depressing 3 points recap of the 135-131 loss suffered by the Rockets in Washington: I hope there were some behind-the-scenes issues, and I suspect there were, that we weren't aware of with Carmelo Anthony. I alluded to this on Twitter yesterday. I didn't say it on the podcast. But when you look early in the season, the wins the Rockets had, oh yes, they were more defensive-minded, but when they found a way to win ugly in Brooklyn and Chicago, it wasn't really that dissimilar to games we have seen against Detroit and Washington. And you can throw Cleveland in there as well on this now 0-3 road trip. Back then, of course, the Rockets were without James Harden due to injury. Tonight, they were without Chris Paul. But they could use any spark at all off a bench that is dead last in the league in scoring, had just 9 points tonight. To put it in perspective how bad the bench is, again, Daniel House, he played his college ball a couple of years ago with Texas A&M and the University of Houston, then played, got a cup of coffee with the Phoenix Suns last year, was with the Rockets Summer League team, played pretty well there. He's been with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers in the G League this year. He was called up from the G League today, signed less than 3 hours for the game, and he played 28 minutes. Your other totals off the bench, Gary Clark, 19 minutes. Isaiah Hartenstein, just 7. Marquise Chris, 5. Michael Carter-Williams, 3. The bench is so bad that the vast majority of the minutes were sopped up by a G League guy. And yes, he brought some needed energy, but he was 1 of 5 overall, 0 of 3 from behind the arc. Let's not act like he was just out there lighting up the Wizards. The Rockets have a serious depth problem. Now, yes, it would help if you had Eric Gordon on the bench, which you would if Chris Paul was out there healthy. But that's only one body. There is no one other than Gary Clark that Mike D'Antoni, and Gary Clark is an undrafted rookie, that Mike D'Antoni has any sort of consistent trust in off the bench. And these two games, as mentioned, especially Detroit and Washington, were games where just one shot, one play here or there are the difference. That's where, yes, even a 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony can help you. When your bench is this bad, there are matchups like when he had 45 points combined in Brooklyn and Chicago on that road trip on well better than 50% shooting. Is he better than some of these names we're throwing out there on the bench that can't even play 10 minutes despite a Rockets team that is clearly fatigued? The Rockets are worried about the minutes for their starters. It's not just now when you play Eric Gordon 43, James Harden 47, PJ Tucker 43. Yeah, that can catch up with them down the road, but they don't have a choice. That's how bad the bench is. Yeah, you better believe that Carmelo Anthony on paper could help you, especially against some of the bad teams. Yeah, I buy that against some of the good ones, like the Pelicans. We saw that the Clippers were kind of a bad matchup for him, that have so many long athletes that maybe he gets just exploited defensively. But especially against some of the bad teams that can't really body him defensively or provide enough length to contest him in terms of when he's able to elevate and score, he can still have value. He did with the Rockets in the first 10 games of the year. And no, I don't think the Rockets panicked. That's not how Daryl Morey does things. I don't think all of a sudden he saw, well, you know, the Rockets are on a slide, so we need to do something different. And he decided to move on from a guy who they signed in the offseason and tried to sign the offseason before that. No, I think it was a much more deliberate, longer-term move. And I think it also had to do with the discussions that we don't fully know that were had between the Rockets and Carmelo Anthony in the offseason about role. And as they said in the goodbye statement, the Rockets still haven't officially released him, but it's a matter of time. As they said in that statement, they didn't think it was fair for Carmelo to go into a role that he wasn't comfortable with. And that was alluding to the fact that if he were the 10th or 11th man off the bench and he weren't happy with that, effectively, it's not worth it if he's not going to play in every matchup. Well, there are going to be some where you could use him, and tonight, this would have been one of them. And yet, they didn't have him, and they're struggling to give guys like Michael Carter-Williams, Marquise Chris, Isaiah Hartenstein, 3, 5, 7 minutes. The Rockets badly need depth. It's not just, you know, I mentioned the long term in terms of minutes management for the starters, but even the short term, some of these defensive issues. Well, yeah, if you're having to extend guys to play this hard, this many minutes every single night, then sure, it takes away their legs a little bit on that end. Even someone that can play 10 or 15 minutes would be very useful for this team right now. And yet the Rockets, after 10 games, let go of a guy who, quite frankly, two of their early wins, I don't think they win without him. Now, again, that's not me criticizing the Rockets because I think there was more to the equation than what is out there for public consumption. At least I hope that's the case. Because for a team that is struggling to fill any bench roles right now, to give away a guy that showed you moments, at least against bad competition, would I like to have a Carmelo Anthony as the 11th or 12th man off the bench to deploy on a stretch like this, especially when guys are getting banged up? Yeah, I would. So I hope there are other things going on. And beyond that, I hope there's a plan, be it a trade, a buyout, whatever it may be, sooner rather than later to fill those minutes. Because yes, the Rockets needed Carmelo Anthony early in the year. He helped them. And while long-term, he might not be the ticket to winning playoff series against the Warriors, the Pelicans, any strong team in the Western Conference, you've got to get there first. It's an 82-game grind, and there are more quality teams in the Western Conference, even by that standard, than there have been in a long time. And we're seeing the Rockets now, they're challenged in ways they weren't a year ago, and even one or two bodies can make the difference. So I hope there's more to the story with Carmelo than we know, because I do think they could use him. Ultimately, I do think there was. But in addition to that, I hope the Rockets have a plan, because early in the year, Carmelo was a part of how they stayed afloat through that rocky stretch. It could have gotten away from them, Instead, they got to 4-5 through 9 games. Could have been a lot worse. And hopefully, they have a similar answer for the stretch that's now 0-3 with really no gimmies for a while. You know, the schedule eases up. But at the same time, it's not like there's anything too easy. The Mavs are a surprising 500 team. They're in Houston on Wednesday. Then you're in San Antonio on Friday. At Minnesota next week. At Utah. At Dallas. All of those are teams that are at least capable. I suppose Saturday at home against Chicago is the one game you look at and you feel pretty good about. But, you know, the Bulls would have beat you a month ago in Chicago. The Rockets won that game by single digits, if not for Carmelo having, I think, 17 on better than 50% shooting. This isn't to say that Carmelo was the answer, that he was especially good. He wasn't. This isn't to rip the Rockets for that decision. What the point is to note that any help the Rockets can get, this is a team that's desperate enough that they called up a guy from the G League who played 28 minutes, is sorely and desperately needed. So there must have been more than what we know going on with Carmelo Anthony. And beyond that, I'm hoping there's also a plan in the near future beyond simply promoting a G League player to getting the Rockets the help they need to fill out the bench. Because this current model, not just in terms of the overall defense, the turnovers, those types of things, just the overall minutes workload right now, it's just not a winning formula in the NBA. Forget winning 65 games like we did a year ago, just to even be a quality playoff team. This needs to get balanced. I'm confident it will. Daryl Morey is probably the best in the league or very close to it when it comes to managing a roster, but there's a lot of pressure because the Rockets right now, it's not just about the performance on the court, it's also the clear roster limitations. And while the Rockets need to control what they can control, the same goes for the front office. And hopefully, in the days ahead, December 15th is when the NBA trade season kicks off in earnest, because that's when guys who signed in the offseason can be dealt. That's barely over a couple of weeks away. Hopefully, the Rockets aren't waiting until February, the deadline, to get something done. Hopefully, there's a sense of urgency to get something done sooner rather than later. Maybe you also get Brandon Knight and or Nene back. We'll see. But the Rockets need bodies desperately. And I think not having Carmelo Anthony, yeah, I know he's not a particularly good player at 34 years old anymore, but you could have used him tonight. So hopefully the Rockets have a plan to get a least competent replacement in the days or weeks ahead. Anyway, I think that's enough depressing talk for one episode. Sorry for bumming all out if I have. So this is where I will leave off. If you do want a very positive take, why don't you check out Locked On Texans? That's our sister show on this Locked On Podcast Network. You can find them at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn. As I'm recording this, the Texans are up 27-17 in the fourth quarter. Hopefully they hold on. If they do, that will be the eighth straight win in a row for the Texans, this time on Monday night against their big rivals, the Tennessee Titans, the former Oilers, of course. So if you want insight in that game, a much more positive recap than what we're doing here tonight at Locked On Rockets, check out Locked On Texans, which you can find at the same platforms where you listen to me. Also, beyond just the obvious plugs of where to download, then you should also follow me on Twitter, at Ben Dubose, simply my name, the show at Locked On Rockets. I've also got a Facebook account, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, and a website, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, where you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or inquire about how to become a potential advertiser, just as our sponsors at Action Heat were today. Remember, stay toasty warm during your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat's full battery-heated line of clothing, and use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. So with the plugs done, this is where we'll leave off. Again, the very unhappy final from Washington, D.C. Wizards 135, Rockets 131. Rockets fall to 9-10 on the year. They're back in action Wednesday night in Houston. I will talk to you guys then. For now, have a good night, and thank goodness for the Texans.